I've been streaming video for ages, but I was never happy with the way the video from my webcam looked. So I went on a bit of an odyssey to finally get to a setup with a decent camera, a decent sensor, decent bokeh, and really good video quality, all for under 500 bucks. This is Tips from the Top Floor, episode 807 for Thursday, January the 18th, 2018. Tips from the top. From the top floor. Tips from the top. All right. From the top floor. Hey, how's everyone doing? This is Chris, and you're listening to Tips from the Top Floor. Not much has happened since last week. Well, let me see. Photographically, I've been mainly working on what I will talk about in a minute here in the show. The Future of Photography, the other podcast that I do together with Adrian, it has a new episode, Unsupervised Image-to-Image Translation Networks. Yep, that's a mouthful. Check it out. Links in the show note. There's also a new episode of Curiously Polar that I do with Mario. The title is Twilight and Sweet Buns. Yep. It's a fun episode. But that's about it for the intro. Let's get into talking about the new camera. Now, I admit the title is a tiny little bit clickbaity because, yes, I do have a new camera. I didn't lie to you about that, but it is a mirrorless camera. It's got an APS-C sensor, but it will not replace my DSLRs. That's not what it's for. It's not meant to be a still camera. I bought it for a very different purpose. And I think the reason it's okay to talk about this here on the show is because it's an example of buying something, not necessarily because I want it, but because I need it. Okay, that's partially. Let me take this partially back. It's a combination of want and need, and I'll get into this now. I needed a webcam. I already do have a webcam. If you've ever watched the Tech Guy Radio Show, you know I have one, and it looks decent. The picture is okay. It's a Logitech 910. It's probably 7 years old or something. The picture looks okay, but there's clearly some room for improvement. The sensor size isn't there and lots of stuff. So I was for the longest time looking for a better version of that, a camera that could stream, that would not break the bank. That was a criterion here. And a camera that had the kind of look that I was going for. And the look is a function of, well, the focal length, the sensor size, the subject distance, and the background distance. That's the four variables that make that picture look the way it looks. And of course, that comes with, well, a certain amount of out-of-focus background, a certain amount of bokeh, and a native one at that. And that's the only way to get that properly is to use a bigger sensor. So I was in the market for something that has a bigger sensor and still acts as a webcam, because the systems, the software I interface with on the computer is webcam based. It needs webcams. It's looking for webcams. And this, the webcam, there's a protocol, I think it's called UVC and Webcam Speak, that protocol, and the the software on the computer expects that protocol. And so just hooking up any camera to the computer needs some additional work. So I was looking for that kind of a camera. And of course, there is no webcam out there with a bigger sensor, at least none that I could find, a proper webcam. They're all tiny sensors, and a tiny sensor comes with the things that a tiny sensor comes with, which is not an exceptionally good low light performance, which here is not a big problem because I have good lighting here. I have, over the last years, I've just gradually improved the kind of lighting I have here for video purposes. So there's LED panels, mostly LED panels actually, and they do a fairly good job with diffusers on them and stuff. So I can light this studio up like a Christmas tree, and it looks decent. That's the one thing. The second thing is the small sensors just don't do the right kind of depth of field that I need. So I was looking for something with a bigger sensor. And the problems to solve there are, okay, a camera with a bigger sensor, the only way to get that into the computer is through their HDMI output. HDMI outputs send out video by definition, and that video then needs to go in the computer somehow, and that's how you get a bigger sensor with a better depth of field and better low light capabilities. Also more control, because webcams typically don't have the controls you want for white balance, for aperture, for these kind of things. A proper camera has that. So that's what I was looking for. And there are some issues that you need to overcome to get that solved, because the HDMI output, for example, with many cameras, is not what's called clean. Clean HDMI out means that it does not include any graphical elements. Very often you have a camera, you plug it in, and you get some, like a recording red dot blinking and a battery symbol and stuff like that. You can't have that on a streaming camera. So that's one thing. The camera has to supply a clean HDMI output, also not a downsized one. For example, the Canon SL1 that I had, the 100D here in Europe, has HDMI out, yes, but it's downsized, it's grainy, it doesn't look good. So that doesn't work. The second thing is how to make the computer see that as a webcam, and that is done with a converter. There are converters out there. Elgato has one. There are like three or four other ones on the market that do that. They take HDMI and they present that to the computer as a webcam. So that is the second thing to solve. Then, of course, the choice of camera. What sensor size do I need? The tiny webcam sensors don't cut it. So the next thing up that I think would make sense would be a Micro Four Thirds or an APS-C or even a full frame sensor. Now, keep in mind, one of my goals here is to keep the price in check, to not break the bank. So full frame, probably not. Micro Four Thirds, maybe closer. APS-C, definitely also possible. So I looked into different things and I ran into a few roadblocks. Roadblock number one was, okay, I do have a couple of really good DSLRs. They also do really good HDMI out. One is the Canon 5D Mark IV, full frame. It's my workhorse. I love the camera. And the HDMI doesn't stay on. You get it to supply clean HDMI, but the camera tries to protect its sensor, goes into shutdown. Even if you disable all the shutdowns and everything, on live view, during recording, it shuts down after, well, an arbitrary amount of time, sometimes 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, but it doesn't stay on reliably. And the one thing I couldn't have is in the middle of a live stream to have the camera go click. It's just not working. The other problem there is if you have to enable recording mode for that, in Europe, most of these cameras are limited to 29 minutes and 59 seconds of recording, and that is for tax reasons, because if they record longer, there's an additional cost involved, which makes it more expensive. Yeah, European laws can be really stupid. So the 5D Mark IV is not in the race anymore. The 7D Mark II, not in the race anymore. Took me some experimentation, because there is not a lot of information out there. So those two do not cut it. Another thing that I explored was HDV cameras, like camcorders that they used to write to tapes. Now they do to memory cards. The one I tried was a Canon Vixia HF, HG, whichever. One of these camcorders that produce a decent picture. They have HDMI output per standard, and it works and it doesn't shut off. The problem with this is the sensor size is too small, so you do not get the kind of depth of field, or I didn't get the kind of depth of field that I wanted. No, that didn't work, so I had to look in a different area. Now, one of the things that these experiments gave me, an important piece of information, to get the kind of look I want, I would need, something like an APS-C sensor with a 20 millimeter focal length. 20 millimeters, the focal length on the sensor determines the angle of view, and my studio is built in a way that with 20 millimeter focal length on an APS-C, it would be just exactly the right angle of view to show exactly what I want. So the 20 millimeters APS-C, that was good. That was a step forward. That one took me like over a week to figure out. So with that information, I went online and I asked several people, and I got input from some people, and ended up with looking at Sony cameras, especially the Sony Alpha 6000 camera. And I didn't get one at that point. I was still doing my research. First question, of course, is can it keep the HDMI out in a clean fashion? And apparently, yep, that was possible. Then I figured out that the 5100 Sony Alpha 5100 would do that as well. And it's pretty much the same camera, just with a couple of differences, like it doesn't have a microphone input. And it doesn't have a viewfinder, just an LCD, which for my limited use case here, hey, doesn't matter to me. Doesn't matter to me at all. The audio comes into the camera or into the picture in a different way anyway. And the viewfinder, hey, doesn't matter to me. The interesting thing is with the Alpha 5100 is you can flip up the display 180 degrees so you can see yourself in the display and control, and check if it looks good. So choice of camera, almost settled at that point. Now, I was also asking around for what lens would make sense, and ended up with a recommendation by someone for a Sigma 19mm f2.8 lens. And the reason I ended up with the f2.8 lens was because I did one crucial bit of additional research, and that was going to dofsimulator.net, dofsimulator.net, which simulates a camera lens combination. It is. I think it's an invaluable tool for this kind of research because it let me choose the okay, everything pretty much. The kind of model, what do I want in the front of the camera? Man, woman, kids, what kind of background? You can choose if you want to have a building or a church or a landscape in the background. You can choose the sensor size or the camera model. So you can choose the camera model. In this case, yep, the Sony cameras are in there. You can choose the kind of lens you want. You can choose at what aperture you want it, and the subject distance, the background distance. And this helped me determine what, and of course I entered the distances that I have here. So between the camera and myself, between the camera and the background, all this is crucial in determining that the way the picture looks and the amount of out of focus that the background has. So that's how I determined that 20 millimeter 2.8 would be a good choice. And then I ended up going with a 19 millimeter because that was, well, close enough. So Sigma 19 2.8, Sony Alpha 5100. Problem solved. That's what I thought at that point. The conversion from HDMI to webcam, from a different project, I have a Blackmagic Ultra Studio mini recorder here, which converts HDMI to Thunderbolt, and Thunderbolt, then that signal is being interpreted as a webcam by most software, and especially by the software that I found to be important here. So that one worked for me. I didn't have any additional cost. The other reason why that camera and that lens were interesting is because they wouldn't break the bank. I got the Sony Alpha 5100 used, and it cost me 250 euros. So the cost was really way further down than I had expected. Same with the Sigma 19 2.8, 150 euros used, and that was all settled. So all problems solved, not so much, because then the problems started, and I had to find workarounds. So first is the power supply. The camera it doesn't come with a battery charger. It charges the battery in camera, so it has a USB port for charging, which is great. Yes, you can get an external charger, but you don't have to. And it's great to be able to do that. And that made me assume that that USB port is also it's possible to power the camera through the USB port. Nah, of course not. That would have been too easy. So the only way to properly solve that is to get what's called a battery coupler, which is a kind of a dummy battery. It looks like the battery, it has the contacts, but then on the other end, a cable comes out and that goes into a power supply, and that can directly power the camera. And then most cameras have, in the battery door, they have a little notch that you can then get this cable through. So this is a solvable problem. So that's not too hard. The other problem I ran into, and that's apparently a problem of the Sigma 19 2.8, which I did not anticipate and I didn't really find out about until I had the lens, was that in autofocus, at least some of those lenses can have a focus, well, jitter. It's like focus pumping, like tick, 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 tick. It's very, very quickly goes back and forth a tiny little bit. And you don't see this on the camera's display, but you see this on the bigger screen later. And it doesn't look nice. It's, yeah, the lens has a problem. I've only found this after specifically searching for the error. I didn't find it with my other research. So first of all, I ended up being kind of a bit disappointed because it really kind of killed the entire picture. But then I figured that I'm doing this as a very limited use case. I am at the same distance of the camera, so I went manual focus, and the range of focus is good enough to keep me in focus. So for this limited use case, this lens works just fine. But on manual focus, if you want an autofocusing lens, then you'd have to probably go for the Sony 20 f2.8, which is at least $300. So, yeah, price tag going up again. But I don't need this for my limited use case here. So that one solved, the lens jitter solved for my use case. Now, here is another issue, and that was, I think, the biggest issue. And I was almost giving up because that took me several days to figure out. The Sony Alpha 5100 has a feature called skin smoothing. It, yeah, does what it says. It smooths your skin. It detects your face and then it irons it. takes out all the little wrinkles and covers your skin with what can only be called wax. It looks like, yeah, I don't know what it looks like, but it doesn't look any good. It doesn't look good. It looks horrible, especially as the face detection isn't perfect. So you move your head around and then it comes in and out, and it's just horrible. It's just really, really bad. Now, there are two menu entries that you can disable. One is called skin smoothing. Hey, uncheck the skin smoothing check mark, and it's still there. And I was like, what? Okay. Second thing you can disable to kind of get rid of it is face tracking. Now, one of the reasons, well, okay, if let's go a step back. Had I used autofocus, the face tracking would have been helpful because it would focus on my face no matter where in the frame. Now, as I'm using it on manual focus, that face tracking isn't as important. But if I ever go back to some autofocus lens on this camera, face tracking is kind of important. Now, having those two disabled does disable skin smoothing. But, of course, it's not solved yet, but only on a recording. Like, you put a card in the camera, you press the record button, and there is no skin smoothing, but the HDMI output still does the skin smoothing, even if you disable those two things. And that sucks. So, because that's what I need it for, right? So, skin smoothing, no dice. And at this point, I don't know how many weeks I was into the process at this point. But then I found a YouTube video, again, only after specifically searching for that issue. Of course, no one else even mentioned it because I guess no one else has my use case. So I found a YouTube video where someone said, hey, it's very easy to take care of. You just have to press record. You have to record to a memory card in the camera to get rid of skin smoothing on the HDMI output. Wow. So that's what I tried. I put an old 16 gigabyte card in there. I pressed record. I formatted it. I pressed record. And lo and behold, the skin smoothing on the HDMI output was gone. Yay! Until about 15 minutes later, the camera turned itself off. What? Did I get a lemon? Did someone sell me his used piece of garbage? Not really. What I found out then is the 5100 has an overheating problem when recording. And that's a problem that's in the camera. It is a problem that every Sony Alpha 5100 has. And it's not always at the same point in time, so you cannot rely on it. Sometimes it turns itself off after 10 minutes, sometimes it does it after 20 minutes, sometimes it does it after 5 minutes. So, that was not the solution. And I luckily had a bit more energy in me to try to find a solution here. Because I did, in the end, find one solution, and it's such an obscure solution for this problem. And again, only after very specifically searching for it and somewhere buried deep in a YouTube video that someone recorded, I found a solution. And the way you get rid of skin smoothing on the HDMI output without having to record and without running into the overheating problem is by zooming in. Yeah, it's just crazy. So there is, and this is not a zoom lens, right? So there is a digital zoom in the camera that you can switch to. I think it's called clear zoom. It's a zoom mode that doesn't look horrible because it crops the sensor. So it crops, it only shows you part of the sensor. And if you zoom in just a tiny little bit, like almost imperceptible and perfectly fine with the focal length and the angle of view I have here. If you zoom in just a tiny little bit, then it turns off skin smoothing on the HDMI output. And my tests so far have shown that it will stay that way. It doesn't show on the HDMI output. It will stay on without overheating. There is no lens jitter because I'm on manual focus. I have this conquered. It's just, isn't it horrible that you have to take that long? Now, okay, of course, there might be solutions out there that do all of that out of the box. But here, I paid $250 for the camera, $150 for the lens. That's $400. Yeah, it's not cheap, but it's $400. So it's doable for that kind of a picture. Has anyone else solved that problem anywhere near that price point? I'm not sure. I'm definitely sure there are solutions that do exactly what I want for a couple of $1,000. That shouldn't be a problem. But I didn't want to go that way. So this is what I found. And maybe it can help some of you avoid these kind of obstacles. Or maybe it can at least serve to remind us that sometimes sticking to it and fighting something through to the end is worth it. Don't give up too quickly. There might be a reward at the end. All right, that was it for this episode. If you want to see what the video setup actually looks like, or rather what kind of video it produces, I've put a video up on YouTube for you to watch. The link is in the show notes. You can find other episodes of this show at tfttf.com. Also, don't forget to set in your voicemails, questions, feedback, anecdotes. Get your voice heard on the show, record it on your smartphone, send it to voice@tfttf.com. That's voice@tfttf.com. I want to hear from you. Creating new episodes of this show every week takes time and effort, and I'm so happy about all of you who support the show. Join in to support Tips from the Top Floor at tfttf.com/support. Your help really makes a difference. tfttf.com/support. Music for the show by Jeff Smith, silent partner, Hans-Peter Kagrud Publishing, and Slack Challenges by Release Pixie, Matt Rafsider Armstead, Slack Invitations by Chief Invitation Officer, CIO Rusty Russ. My name is Chris Marquardt. Follow me on Facebook and on Twitter at Chris Marquardt. And of course, go out and take amazing photos, be nice to each other, and happy shooting.